Hi, I'm Jen White, and this is The Morning Shift. In just a little bit, we'll celebrate Aretha Franklin's posthumous Pulitzer. But first, a more serious subject, including material that may not be suitable for everyone, especially children. There are a lot of unsolved murders in Chicago. Over the last few years, there have been many stories, including here on The Morning Shift, about the Chicago Police Department's low homicide clearance rates. But thanks to the Murder Accountability Project, CPD and the FBI are now investigating 51 unsolved murders to see if they're the work of one or more serial killers. The Murder Accountability Project is a small nonprofit. It's collected the nation's most complete accounting of unsolved murders and massive amounts of data that can be run through an algorithm on their website. That algorithm identified patterns in these 51 Chicago cases. More than three quarters are African American women. They all took place over the last two decades. They all took place on Chicago's South and West Sides. They're all strangulations, and the list goes on from there. Retired investigative journalist Thomas Hargrove is the Murder Accountability Project's founder. He describes even more of the patterns he found around these cases.
In the South Side cluster, the largest, there's a very unusual linear north to south pattern, as if a killer or killers were finding women along a route that they often drove. We do believe that if this is a series, and we absolutely believe it is, that the killer or killers has access to a vehicle, that they are able to transport themselves, find victims, and they're becoming quite adept at disposing of their bodies without being detected, or at least without witnesses coming forward to describe the assailant. There are quite a few really dramatically different components to this particular group of murders.
Well, these murders span nearly two decades. If this is the work of a single serial killer, would that timeline make sense? Or is it more likely you're looking at a number of people?
A Chicago detective told me that his best guess is this is probably two or three multiples, as he put it. Eric Witzig, a member of our board who used to hunt serial killers for a living with the FBI, he believes this series could be the work of primarily one person. That is possible. The MO is really very, very similar. But two or three different offenders is a possibility, too. We won't know until we start catching this guy or these guys.
You have had some success in identifying serial killers in the past, including just over the Indiana border in Gary. Talk about that case.
Yeah, that's kind of a sad, kind of a frustrating case. The first time we ran the algorithm, I was still a professional journalist working in Washington, D.C. When we ran it, it pointed to 15 unsolved strangulations in Gary, Indiana. I called the Gary Police Department and the Lake County Coroner's Office and told them the same thing, that I'm Tom Hargrove, I'm a journalist, we have a statistical procedure that may identify serial murder, and we think there's something wrong with these entirely unsolved group of strangulated women. The Gary Police Department told us that they had reviewed their files and determined there were no serial killers still active, and that was the end of the story. They would not have any further conversation. The Lake County Coroner's Office assigned an investigator, and they believed quite strongly that there were too many quite similar cases, all of them unsolved. In fact, they added three more cases we didn't know about, so they were investigating 18. But they also were not able to get participation from the Gary Police Department. So we published our story. I was terrified that we were, the reason the Gary Police Department weren't talking to us was because they were hot on the heels of their suspect and couldn't talk about it. But we just got complete radio silence with them. We went ahead and published. In 2014, next door to Gary, the Hammond Police Department were called to a disturbance at a Motel 6, and they found the body of Africa Hardy, a 19-year-old woman, strangled in the bathtub. They quickly made an arrest of Darren Dion Van, who, as sometimes happens with these guys, immediately confessed, "You've got me. I've been at this for quite a while, since the 1990s. and he agreed to take them back into Gary, Indiana, where they recovered six other previously completely unknown homicide victims, all women who had been strangled. When there was a press conference the next day after Mr. Van's arrest was announced, the first question the police chief was asked was, "Chief, did you know that you had a serial killer?" And he said, "We have absolutely no idea." I had sent registered letters to the police chief, to the mayor, and never received a response. It was really very, very frustrating. Well, the response from the Chicago police has been much, much better.
Well, that was my question, because here in Chicago, you're talking about 51 possibly linked murders, and that number is chilling, quite frankly. When you initially came to CPD and identified this pattern, what happened next?
Well, we had a conversation with a detective in 2017 explaining the algorithm results and what our review disclosed. We had suggested that it's even possible the killer or killers lives or works in a kind of a donut, a relatively no-crime area between Chicago's west and south sides. We were thanked, but nothing much happened immediately. But the press kept picking at it. HBO Vice News did a story, and then Channel 2, the CBS affiliate, did a series of very powerful stories just recently. And Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police, has called for a full-fledged review. And such a thing is really quite labor-intensive. It's going to take quite an effort just to assemble all of the documentation. The 51 murder books are scattered in precincts all over the city. It's going to take a while to do this review, but they are quite clear that they're going to do a proper job. They are going to try to identify untested DNA, which there seems to be quite a bit.
You know, you have a cluster of murders. This has gone over, you said, a couple of decades now. How much does the identity of the victims matter to the amount of attention these cases get?
I often present to groups of homicide detectives, and that's a common thought, that it's a common expression among homicide detectives, "We speak for God," which is their way of saying that they care about murders that nobody else cares about. One of the reasons why we've seen a decline in the rate at which homicides get cleared is because quite often it's marginal people that are killed, and insufficient resources are being applied to law enforcement for those deaths. But homicide detectives tend to be pretty passionate. All lives matter, and they tend to care about the termination of lives that few people cared about. I find it kind of inspiring. I see no sign of that in Chicago. I see no sign of that wherever I go. I believe homicide detectives are fairly passionate about their craft. They want to clear murders.
What kinds of challenges will detectives here in Chicago face as they continue their work around this cluster of 51 deaths?
Solving a series is never easy. Look at the Green River Project in Seattle. Catching Gary Ridgway took 20 more than 20 years, and it was a phenomenal effort by police, and they really did nothing wrong. It just took that long to catch him. One of the problems was Gary Ridgway had passed a polygraph. He had been a suspect earlier. I believe it likely that the killer or killers are already known to police. They already pop up on suspect lists. These are usually not choir boys. They have a record. And it just is a tremendous amount of work to successfully bring a serial investigation to a conclusion.
That's Thomas Hargrove. He's founder and chairman of the Murder Accountability Project. Thomas, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don't play that song for me. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, is now a Pulitzer Prize winner. Yesterday, she became the first woman to win a special citation prize for her, quote, indelible contribution to American music and culture for more than five decades. It was a posthumous award. Franklin passed away in August at the age of 76. After her death, I sat down with three Chicago musicians, jazz singer Tammy McCann, soul and jazz singer Lily Kay, and rock and soul artist Crystal Metcalf, to hear what Aretha Franklin meant to them. Here's some of that conversation. We'll hear first from Crystal Metcalf.
I love how she was just unapologetically herself. I feel like she busted open the doors for all little black girls to come and have that same magic she did, as well as other women artists, and just to see how she was fearless in doing it and being vocal about it and demanding respect and just really being herself and not caring what anybody thought about it.
Well, we asked everybody to bring in their suggestions, their favorite songs from Aretha, but this is one of mine, and this is a song released in 1976. A lot of people, actually, strangely to me, don't know that Aretha Franklin sang the soundtrack for the movie Sparkle. But this is one of the songs from Sparkle. It's called Hooked on Your Love. That's the 1976 song, Hooked on Your Love, written by Curtis Mayfield. I don't know about y'all.
I didn't know Curtis wrote that.
That song makes me want to put on some high heels.
We almost stood up and got in line. Like,
red. Right, we automatically start. We like lined up like sister and the sister. We were like, okay, we've got the choreography ready. We are ready to
feathers in our red dress.
But this is one of those songs where there's nothing overtly sexual about it, but the sensuality she's able to infuse is just off the charts. It's amazing. Crystal, what's the song for you?
I'm like such a clean version after that one. Say a little prayer.
Say a little prayer.
I love sing-alongs. I throw that song in my set sometimes, and I'm like, this is going to be my best friend's wedding moment. We're going to all sing this together. But it just puts me in the greatest mood. I will put it on repeat. I send it to my husband, like, I'm thinking of you. I love that song with all of my heart.
Well, let's take a listen to it.
Oh.
The moment I wake up, before I pull on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. And while combing my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now,
you really sing across a variety of genres. One of the amazing things about Aretha Franklin is that she really could sing everything. I mean, gospel, soul, jazz, rock, opera.
I feel like she was just her own genre.
I think that's fair. Talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I feel like she just operated completely outside the lines of genre, which is what made her so powerful. Like, she was able to just translate anything into something every single person could feel.
Yeah.
For doesn't matter what the song was. It could be the ABCs, and you'd be like, I love the alphabet.
But like, she still sounded like herself.
Like herself.
Yeah. She didn't change her voice.
Always her, which I think goes back to her being just unapologetically herself in every aspect of her life.
Well, speaking of opera, here's the Queen of Soul singing the Puccini aria,
yes,
Nessun Dorma, at the Grammys in 1998. Here's the backstory. The famed tenor Luciano Pavarotti was scheduled to perform at the event, but he fell sick and with 20 minutes. Mm. Okay, she had 20 minutes. Aretha Franklin stepped on the stage and brought the audience at Radio City Music Hall and across the world just to tears. Let's listen to this. Okay. Now, Tammy, I know you were saying as we were listening that you got to see this performance. Talk about that moment for you.
You know, new generations now get to have YouTube, right? But we didn't have that. That was a moment in time. And I just happened to be watching at that moment. And when I knew I was going to be coming on, I watched it again, and I still got goosebumps. I really haven't seen it since that night. And the level of expertise that it takes to maneuver through that song.
Because you're classically trained.
Yes. And as Lily said, the fact that she could make every song her own, she added her, you know, melismas in there. And then what was even more amazing is that in the center of the song, she started singing in English. So she said, let me really tell you the story and break it down for you. But that was, she was the queen of break it down. let me take you on this journey with me. If you don't understand this Italian, come on, let's go. I'm gonna really tell you how I feel. It was just a magical moment, and it's one of those live moments, one of those gifts that she's given to us for so many years. Do you know she was one of the youngest Kennedy Center Honor recipients?
Wow.
I mean, she was 51, and a Lifetime Achievement Award at that time.
Giving her the flowers.
I'm telling you. So uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind, and you're the key to my peace of mind. 'Cause you make me
Natural Woman is one of these songs that a lot of people think about when they think about Aretha Franklin. And I mean, for me, when I hear it, it's one of those. It's like my hair is short, but I want to take my hair down. You know what I mean? Like, I want to take my hair down. What does that song do for you all, Lily?
Exactly the same thing. It just like boosts your confidence and you just feel like all of your womanness. You know what I mean? Like, you can't help but just kind of feel yourself when you're listening to that song. And honestly, it's on my playlist of, you know, sometimes we're having like a down day or off day and you're like, no, I need to like gas myself up. Yeah. That's definitely on that playlist.
And there's a universality in not just that song, but in most of Aretha's music, where no matter who's listening to it, it just hits you at this really visceral level.
I think the real important phrase is, you make me feel. So... when my soul was in the lost and found, you came along.
Ooh, Tammy.
To claim it.
Mm. She breaking it down.
I'm serious. Mm. And, you know, there needs to be a doctoral thesis breaking down the lyrics of Aretha Franklin. But that's really what the story is, that, you know, I once was lost, but now I'm found because of this love that you've given me. And that's what I drink. That's what I gained from it.
Tammy, tell us your song, your favorite song with Aretha, or one that really strikes a chord with you.
You know, I must say that my background was really very strange. I didn't really listen to a lot of Aretha. My parents were, they had me listen to a whole lot of different music. I really kind of soft rock. And so I got the joy to be really exposed and bathed in Aretha's music as I was developing my jazz career. And so she had a jazz CD called Aretha Franklin, And on that CD was a song called Today I Love Everybody. And the great part about this song is, as Lily and Crystal were saying, that she brought herself to every genre of music that she stepped into. And that's one of the things that I learned from her, that, you know, I don't have to sound like Ella. I don't have to sound like Dinah. I can just be myself. And she swung this song. Man, it's nothing but swing. Today I love everybody.
Because today I love everybody.
In addition to Aretha receiving that Pulitzer Prize, the long-awaited concert film Amazing Grace is out. It's playing at the AMC River East Theater in Streeterville, the showplace icon off Roosevelt Road, and the Century 12 in Evanston. Guess what I'm doing this weekend? If you have any recommendations for things to see, hear, or eat this weekend, give our hotline a call. The number is 888-915-9945. That's 888-915-9945. You can also tweet us at WBEZ Morning, and I'm at Jay White Pub Radio. That's it for The Morning Shift. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast, and thanks for listening. I'm Jen White. Let's talk again tomorrow. Folks are great, and everybody here loves me. Well, if joy can be contagious, why not catch this real outrageous thing, miss? This glorious thing, miss? Marvelous thing, all day. I'd give anybody anything that you see. And everybody here loves everybody.